the McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
This hour on the Score brought to you by Continental Auto Sports. Searching for the pre-owned exotic of your dreams? Search Continental Auto Sports for the Continental difference. And this segment is brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Anthony Herron is in for Dan McNeil. I'm Danny Parkins. We're taking you up until Cubs baseball. Brandon Kinstler is back, as is Addison Russell. And Albert Almora has been optioned to Iowa. Obviously, with Javi Baez's sickness also, Addison Russell could be used as a defensive replacement at shortstop. Shep, do we have a Cubs lineup yet tonight?
I was just starting to look for
it. I haven't seen one yet.
Pending the health of one Javier Baez.
Oh, okay. So they're waiting on Javi's health. Okay, makes sense. So when we see that, we will know if Russell is already back with the team for tonight. And they were in Memphis last night, so obviously Memphis to Pittsburgh, not too long, depending on when they let him know and made that decision. He can get there in time for the game. So we'll be following that and updating you as we go. But the Bears have a preseason game tonight, and I'm actually more interested in the Giants than the Bears, frankly, tonight, because you get to see Daniel Jones, sixth overall pick.
Right.
We can discuss what you're interested in the game in a second, but I'm curious in the big picture. It feels like Matt Nagy's done messing around playing his starters to me. And I love it. I've wanted this for a long time. I think it's completely unnecessary to risk injury in a sport where availability is such a huge differentiating factor between the successful teams and the teams that have bad years, that exposing guys to unnecessary hits seems bad for me in terms of win expectation. But last night, Dan Quinn and the Falcons, I don't know if you saw this, but Matt Ryan played well into the second quarter. He got sacked three times. He got hit five times. He dropped back to pass. He 14 pass attempts. And so there's clearly coaches that are smart, good, and accomplished. But I just don't get what Matt Ryan, an 11-year pro and a former MVP, gets out of preseason football. Like, what is the upside of playing Matt Ryan when the downside is your season's over if he gets hurt in a meaningless game? I don't understand what the risk calculus there.
He definitely gets something out of being in the preseason game. It's more about, to the latter point you were making there, what is the risk calculus of having him in that game versus the risk you're taking of him potentially missing any time, if not the bulk of time, during the regular season. For Dan Quinn to do that when you got a new offensive coordinator coming in, what's going to be a new system? You know, Matt Ryan's always struck everyone as a fairly quick learner, but to get him, and, you know, you're not playing Julio Jones, so it's not even like he has his biggest, best weapon out there with him while that's going on, but you're putting Matt Ryan in a position where, from Dan Quinn's perspective, I'm sure he's saying, let's get my quarterback reps within this new system with the new coordinator coming in. I know the New Orleans Saints are going to start hot and heavy on offense. They're going to come out of the gates firing. So we need to make sure we're out of the gates firing to keep up with the pace, not just surely the pace of scoring, but the pace of wins. Our offense is going to be part of what wins us games this season, more so than the defensive side of the football. We've got a great quarterback as far as, you know, modern day NFL standards are, you know, for how you would judge Matt Ryan. But he wants to make sure they're going to be able to keep pace with the Saints, whereas for Matt Nagy, I was somewhat surprised that Trubisky got reps in the game last week. And within this division, the Bears, with good reason, will have confidence that they can step onto the field as the best team in this division. But that being said, if you do have a slow start offensively this year, if you do have a situation where your defense has to carry the day, you should be confident in the Bears' D. But if the Vikings come out really firing, if Green Bay comes out really firing, and they're winning along the same pace you are, now it's really going to be about those head-to-head matchups and whether you can dominate the division for a second year in a row in the divisional play itself.
Do you agree with me that Matt Nagy's not going to play his starters in any of these games?
I don't. I'd be surprised if he didn't play them at all. Will Mitch see snaps again at all this preseason? It would seem odd to me that you take the risk of doing it in game one and then don't do it at all again for the rest of the preseason.
It seemed to me what he was doing in game one was simply go through the reps on game day, and he was only calling handoffs. So like, if they would have gotten a first down, they're just going to run the ball again. They were going to run the ball with the starters and Mike Davis, right? Not even David Montgomery, not Tariq Cohen, with their least valuable running back.
Yeah.
it was just about going through the motions of game day.
It was. It was. But those motions could have been gone through in the third preseason game when very likely, you know, there'd be other guys who would be at least to some degree contributors. Now, it didn't work out this way exactly last season based off five preseason games as opposed to four like they're playing this year. But the third preseason game is normally one where you're anticipating there will be more starters, more contributors, getting at least a healthy amount of reps in that game. So it would have stood to reason to me more building him towards game number three without much, if any, time as opposed to game one. You get some snaps, and now you're going to go 3 weeks with no game action, essentially, before you take the field on national television opening Thursday night against Green Bay.
Yeah, I mean, they did their walkthrough thing at Soldier Field.
Simulated with, in front of the crowd.
With the simulation in front of the crowd and all of that. I think we're going in this direction in football, and Matt Nagy's already there. And Sean McVay didn't play a single starter in a single preseason game last year, and they went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So there's a divide between young and old coaches, it seems, because Bill Belichick still throws Tom Brady out there in the preseason.
Right.
Andy Reid throws Pat Mahomes out there in the preseason. We just saw Dan Quinn do it to Matt Ryan. I find it fascinating that it seems to be a straight age divide because a lot of coaches are coming around and doing it more like McVay and Nagy. Kyle Shanahan came out and said he'd rather have zero preseason games than four. You can just look at these coaches and you can look at the box scores and see, oh, these guys are not doing it and others are, and it's making these games super lopsided because some coaches will approach it like they did back when you were in the league. And it's starter. I mean, I bet you some coaches will play starters into the third quarter of preseason game number three,
right?
Because that's how it's always been
done,
right? Yeah. And then there will be some coaches that won't play their guys for a single rep. And it's a texter says, "Come on, Parkins, how many guys have been lost due to injuries in preseason? The Jets just lost their starting inside linebacker yesterday for the season, Avery Williamson." Tony Romo, the year that he got replaced by Dak Prescott.
The back issue.
Yep. In the preseason. Mike Vick, preseason injury. Jordy Nelson, preseason injury. There are plenty of Odell Beckham suffered a preseason injury. There are plenty of high-profile examples where it can completely derail the season in games that are meaningless that just as a player, I'm wondering, does it make you 5% less ready for week one? Or is it 25% less likely or less ready for week one? Because it seems to me whatever that rust factor is made up for in terms of health.
I was shocked at the approach Matt Nagy took last year because he was new. His system offensively was new. So many of the players, whether new to the NFL itself or not, but just new to each other, new to actually being on the field together, breaking a huddle, running this system that they were all learning together at the same time. I was shocked last year at his approach. Because you're going to enter the season with such limited knowledge of how your players in a game setting, how your key players are going to handle what you've actually been teaching them and training them throughout the preseason. This year, I was fairly surprised, like I was saying, almost shocked that he played Mitch at all in game one, because now you're in year two of that system. You've seen them all out there doing this together. So what you actually have, the ingredients that bring your offense together, have already been in place. You've already been making this stew together for a couple of years now, so it doesn't feel as necessary to me to have them all out there on the field in unison, working the repetition of playing this scheme, this system, because they've done it before, and pretty much the offense returns intact, minus your running back from last year, Jordan Howard. So it doesn't feel as necessary to me in this setting. But in certain settings, whether it's new scheme, all new coaches, new players, rookie quarterback, whatever the case may be, I think the risk-reward end of it factors in to a lesser extent because you do want to be able to, once regular season games are played, there's only 16 of them, so you want to be at your best when they actually start playing. It's not quite as simple as saying, well, we're going to be rusty early. If you're rusty the first 3 weeks of the season and you go 1-2 or 0-3, your season can be over in some of these divisions.
Of course, the games matter a lot. There used to be six preseason games in the NFL, and then they went down to four.
Right.
Like, things change.
Yeah.
It used to be guys had jobs bagging groceries or doing construction in the offseason. Now they make enough money that there's year-round training and nutritionists and all that sort of stuff. So college football doesn't have preseason. Some teams start out playing the Citadel.
Mm-hmm.
Others start out, Give me a, what's a high profile week one college football game?
Oregon's going to play Auburn.
Oregon Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
That game's going to matter,
right,
for a team's shot at a playoff or anything like that. That's a week one game with no preseason.
But none of you get preseason games is the thing, though. So you're all working from the same menu. Whereas in the NFL, you have four preseason games available to you. If some folks, like the New England Patriots, who tend to start slow during the regular season anyway,
yeah,
but if they take advantage of it in having their starters out there, and then they're better during the first month of the season than someone else who didn't, I'll use the continue to use the term, take advantage of their preseason by getting guys ready from game conditions, then they may start slower and you didn't use what was available to you in that scenario.
That's 100% true that everyone's at the same playing field, but I guess what I'm saying is, a lot of times the arguments I hear about preseason are you got to get calloused and you got to practice tackling and you got all, you know, you're not tackling in practice and all that stuff. And sure, there's some value to that, but the offset of the risk of injury doesn't seem to come close to me anymore. And they're able to do it without doing preseason games in college and have a fairly high level of action there in week one, week two, that sort of thing. And so I think it's really interesting that we are clearly in a transitional period for the
agree.
NFL. Because if this schedule eventually goes to 18 games, which the NFL owner seems to want, and that CBA is coming up in 2 years, if they extend the regular season, I can guarantee you one of the things they'll give the players is they're going to cut the preseason.
Right.
So we know it's going in that direction of less and less and less. And so the idea of Matt Nagy already being there and so many of his coaching contemporaries, including the person that he learned from, not being there is really interesting to me. Because the NFL's it's a copycat league.
Yeah.
A lot of teams just do it the same way, and they follow trends. And this is one right now where it seems to be a lot of smart people, Bill Belichick and Andy Reid on one side, Matt Nagy and Sean McVay on the other side. A lot of smart people seem to have huge disagreements about the value and the risk in these games of using players who matter.
Right. And I mean, you know, depending on how you feel about your job security as a coach may factor into how much you feel like you need. And that calculus then is what is the risk you're willing to take with having starters out there like a Dan Quinn, who, you know, he may not necessarily be coaching for his job, but obviously the Falcons need to rebound from what we saw from them last season coming off the Super Bowl loss from the year before.
That'd be all the more reason for me not to play him.
But then at the same time, if you want to feel like you're confident your guys are getting the proper work in within this new system, maybe there's just more comfort that a guy like Dan Quinn is going to have in thinking, you know what, I've seen him for maybe two games, just parts of two different games during the preseason. I like the way we're, you know, breaking the huddle. I like the way that we're getting to the line of scrimmage. He's seen the proper checks that need to happen. They're getting back and having real film that they have an opportunity to evaluate between him and who is a Dirk Cutter, I think, is their offensive coordinator there now. So you're getting those various factors of having your opportunity to step into game one for the Falcons in this scenario as good, as oiled up as you can when you actually start the real games that matter during your season. That's part of what Dan Quinn is factoring in. Whereas Matt Nagy, you know, his job isn't on the line. They're coming off a great season. You got nothing to do. That's why I was so surprised to see Mitch Trubisky take those first three snaps of the game last week. And if, like you're saying, if it ends up being where he doesn't play again this preseason, it would just make me wonder, well, why not do that in game three? Why not have him hand off the first three snaps of game four? Because at least that is in concert with you building up, ascending his preparation towards the season. To do it in game one, I mean, it's not the end of the world, but it just seems like it would make more sense. It would be more plausible to think that you're building him towards the season if you do it towards the end of the preseason, getting him a few snaps towards as opposed to doing it game one, and then he doesn't see the field again until you play regular season game.
It felt to me like that practice that they did the other night with the 60 scripted plays for offense and defense.
Yeah.
That to me felt like preseason game number three. And so once I read the details of what they did there and I saw how he handled preseason game number one, where it was three runs, and then all the starters were out. And on defense, only four starters were in, and it was one series, and they were out.
Mm.
And then they have that practice. It just feels like that guy is done with it. And he's like, I got my team. I know what we are. We're going to practice, but we're keeping everything under wraps, and I'm bringing a healthy team to Soldier Field September 5th. Reasonable minds can disagree on it, but I absolutely love how Matt Nagy is handling it. You texted me something that I haven't heard anyone say about Mitch Trubisky, and with that guy, that's a rarity, because I feel like everybody said everything there is to say about him, but I genuinely had never heard this point, so I want you to expand on it next on The Score.
Is Mitch good?
Trubisky going to float it into the left corner of the end zone. Robinson's got it. Touchdown!
Or bad.
Throwing, and it's intercepted on the overthrow. The third interception today of Mitch Trubisky.
Yes, the question on everyone's mind that we hope will be answered at some point this season.
Not during the preseason.
No, I hope he doesn't see the field again during the preseason. Wrap the whole starting team in bubble wrap. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall. The 25th-ranked Northwestern Wildcats, led by Big Ten Coach of the Year Pat Fitzgerald, host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com. He's Anthony Herron in for Mac. This is McNeil and Parkins on the score. Addison Russell is back. Albert Elmore has been optioned to AAA. Brandon Kinsler back as well for your Cubs news. Still waiting on a lineup for tonight's game behind Kyle Hendricks in Pittsburgh. Anthony, you texted me something to the effect of, if Mitch Trubisky doesn't turn out to be good, you are going to blame Mark Helfrich and Matt Nagy and not Mitch Trubisky, because you've seen enough from Mitch already to know that he can be good.
Yep.
That is fascinating to me on a number of levels. Can you please lay out why you feel that way?
Coaching the quarterback position in the NFL was struggling for a long time. Now, you know, from the outside, just kind of voyeurs are looking at it and saying the quarterback position in the league was struggling for a long time. And it was. But it wasn't because there was a lot of guys who weren't talented were entering the NFL and couldn't play. There was a rigidity to the way the position was being coached in the National Football League that wasn't keeping up with the way that quarterbacks are being taught at lower levels, the way that the offensive skill in the game and the rules adjustments that were taking the game in a different direction, in a far more offensive direction, were allowing quarterbacks to do things with pace, in the shotgun, operating in the no huddle, and having less pre-snap decision-making being heaped upon them, especially very early in their NFL career, that the NFL has finally in recent years started to move further and further in that direction. It's essentially taking a lot of the tenets of college football and now seeing it in the National Football League. So we're starting to see this renaissance in a lot of great young quarterbacks in the National Football League that felt like maybe 5 to 7 years ago, it wasn't the case. We were trying to figure out who's going to be the next bastion of great QBs. What's going to happen when all these older guys retire? We didn't see the youth movement in the league that we're seeing right now. As it relates to the Bears and Mitch Trubisky, I was a guy who, I would say it here on the station, when they traded up to two and they drafted Mitch at that spot, I didn't understand the move. I didn't think it was a necessary move, and specifically the evaluation of Mitch as a quarterback himself within that class. Now, I had Mahomes at number three, but I had Deshaun Watson, in my opinion, as the best quarterback in that class. Mitch is number two, and Pat Mahomes as the third best guy. But I've been, and that wasn't because I thought Mitch would be bad, but I figured there would be a transitional phase he would need to go through. And part of that was not necessarily knowing what the intangibles were in Mitch, because he hadn't necessarily been tested in the same manner that he was going to be tested once he got to the NFL. What's impressed me in watching him is it's hard to know for sure how hard a guy's willing to work until you really put him through the grind. And he is willing to be the leader of the grind when it relates to trying to get better at his craft with the Bears. There's a lot of things about the natural acumen for throwing the ball that he doesn't have that Pat Mahomes does have. There's a lot of things that look very easy with the way a talent like that delivers the football with accuracy, with adjusting velocities, with trajectory where the ball turns over quickly, that don't come naturally and easily to Mitch. But Mitch is a reps guy. He just loves to work it over and over again and enhance his acumen, his execution for the position in doing that. So to me, in seeing a few years into his Bears career, a guy that has all the arm strength you could hope for, has more than enough mobility to play the position at a high level, is as coachable as you could hope for a guy who was a number two pick in the draft, who has the world at his fingertips as the quarterback of one of the preeminent franchises in the NFL, and seems to have the acumen, not necessarily a football savant, but has the mental aptitude to be able to handle the position. And so to me, when you're a coach and you're hoping for a tutee, if you're the tutor, and you're hoping for someone who's going to be willing to put the work in, who has more than enough God-given ability to do it at a high level, I'm not sure what more the Bears could hope for than what they have available to them from Mitch, Now it's going to be up to Matt Nagy to continue to put a system in place that he can execute at a high level, because maybe he can't do the same thing that Jared Goff does. Maybe he can't do the same thing that Pat Mahomes does. But there's a version of football that Mitch Trubisky can play at a high level, and we've seen him be able to handle big moments. The fact that he'd never been really under the microscope before, the fact that he'd never played a huge game before, you know, by my estimation, in his entire life, and then he had to do that in the National Football League playoffs, had to make huge plays to try and lead his team back when trailing at the end of that game against the Eagles last year. And he was able to do it. He was able to make huge throws to Allen Robinson. He was able to, with limited time in the second half of that game, coming down the wire, put them in position to attempt a 43-yard field goal. There were things to me, and there was a number of second half of games that I would go on post-game live over on 32 and say, you know what, Mitch played a lot better in the second half of that game than he did in his first. So there's things I feel like I've seen about Mitch intangibly that are very hard to evaluate from 13 starts playing quarterback at North Carolina, where no one cares whether you're good or not, that I've seen enough to think that Mitch has all the potential in the world to be, you know, maybe not a Hall of Famer, but to be a top-flight quarterback, to be a very good quarterback in the NFL, if at this point he continues to get the proper tutelage, which I believe he will get from Matt Nagy, from Mark Helfrich. So to me, so much of the blame ends up when quarterbacks aren't playing well is trained. The focus is trained specifically on that individual. We don't spend enough time focusing on whether or not they've actually been taught to play the system, play the position at a high level, and have a system in place that allows them an opportunity to succeed.
It's very well laid out. It's interesting to me because you're right. Like, Bears fans know it with Jay Cutler very well. There still are a lot of Jay Cutler defenders who say if he would have just been given a good offensive coordinator and had continuity with it for his entire career, Jay Cutler would have reached a different level.
I disagree with that.
I do too.
Okay.
Alex Smith was a number one pick. He had five offensive coordinators, I believe, in his first 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
That really stuttered and stunted his development.
Right.
And
you
he did
no
not
consistency with your scheme, with the system you're running, with your ability to take it to another level, not be thinking, to have it become muscle memory for you.
And the example that I always use with Alex Smith is he was known as the checkdown guy,
mm-hmm.
but when he got Andy Reid in Kansas City, or Andy Reid got him more accurately in Kansas City, and they traded for him, very conservative at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He threw zero touchdowns to a wide receiver for an entire 16-game season. It had never been done before. By his fourth year with Andy Reid, he led the NFL in deep ball accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
Captain checkdown Alex Smith.
Right.
So that shows
he was the number one overall pick for a reason.
Right. And that shows what a talent can do in a good system.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I will, for now, based on what we know now,
mm-hmm.
disagree with you is because who do I think is better at their job right now? Matt Nagy at coaching or Mitch Trubisky at quarterbacking? It's pretty clear to me that it's Matt Nagy at coaching,
mm-hmm.
and that system is proven to work. Like, Doug Peterson did it with Carson Wentz.
Mm.
Jeff Garcia, Kevin Cobb, Mike Vick, Donovan McNabb, Alex Smith, all have had career years under Andy Reid in that system. Obviously, Pat Mahomes, right? Andy Reid finally gets an elite talent. He's the MVP of the league.
Mm-hmm.
So it strikes me as the system works. Now, we've never seen Matt Nagy as the head coach
right.
have to implement it,
right?
But we know, like, he's only coached for one guy. We know what the system is. We know it's the system that is being used throughout the NFL.
We know that last season was the first time he actually spent a full year calling plays for that system that he has learned so well under Andy Reid.
Correct. So it feels to me like Matt Nagy was there in Kansas City when they drafted Pat Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't here in Chicago when Ryan Pace drafted Mitch Trubisky.
Mm-hmm.
And Pace had an opportunity to draft all three of them.
Right.
So if Mitch busts 2 years from now, three mm-hmm. years from now, if we're like, ugh, this guy can never be better than the 20th best quarterback in the NFL, it's time to find another one, I will have a hard time believing that the system that has worked for all of these other quarterbacks of varying degrees of skill set is the problem, and it's not Mitch Trubisky.
All these other quarterbacks you named, the bulk of them were under the tutelage of Andy Reid, though.
Correct,
at their
of
best.
Course, of course.
Not specifically Matt Nagy being the one with the big whistle, calling the shots, even calling the plays. I mean, even as the offensive coordinator, for the majority of time in Kansas City, he wasn't the play caller. Now, to the initial point you made, I 100% agree. Matt Nagy is a better head football coach right now than Mitch Trubisky is a starting quarterback in the NFL. That being said, and I'm, you know, I've heard you on the show calling out certain things within game management that Matt Nagy, you don't feel like has done well. There's been a number of times on
I
radio.
Crushed him week one last year, that Packers game. I didn't mean to cut you off. He forgot about having a running back and that there was a ton of value in milking the clock down with a lead, even if he had to settle for a short field goal.
And certainly make a case that in the playoff game, he forgot he had Tariq Cohen, you know, one of the best Swiss Army knives on offense in the NFL at this point. And so my point being, Matt Nagy is obviously not flawless in his execution of these things, as we have both pointed out. There were a number of games last year where I came out of it, and you know, I can disagree with a number of people about the usage rate of Jordan Howard, if nothing else, how he was utilized within the offense. If and I do anticipate the run game will improve this season, the way that they run the football, the way that they began to run the football at the end of the season last year when Jordan Howard did start to pick up yards showed growth to me in Matt Nagy as a head coach, as an in-game play caller, as Mark Helfrich, and recognizing what the personnel he had available to him would now allow him to do. They were calling the run game fairly differently early in the season than they were later in the year. I don't anticipate some of those same mistakes. Situational play calling, to me, is a very key space of development I want to see from Matt Nagy and his, you know, Mark Helfrich being the helper in game planning for how Matt Nagy will call the plays during the games on third and short, on fourth and inches, even just in, you know, whether it's first and 10, where it felt to me last season like Matt Nagy always needed to outsmart the opposing defense. Where I more frequently would like him to find moments where he says, you know what, my personnel is better than the opponent's personnel. I don't need to out-scheme them. I don't need to outsmart them. I don't need to do something overly cute and clever, because quite frequently last season, an option play with a QB on third down didn't work, or a shovel pass after the opponents had seen that a few times didn't work as well, where perhaps just handing the football off, doing a stretch play, whatever the case may be, something more standard could have perhaps put his offense in a position where they just overwhelmed an opponent because he has the personnel to do that. But it felt like he frequently felt he needed to out-scheme the opponent when it wasn't always necessary. So that's one small cog in what I feel like he can continue to improve with as a play caller. That being said, none of those may be the factor in why Mitch may not end up being good. And so that, to me, is the question I ask myself about whether or not I think Mitch should become a high-level quarterback in the NFL, because I don't see things on his resume at this point in where he's at in his development that I look at and say, you know what, that won't improve or that can't improve. The physical tools are there, the mental skills are there, the ability for him, the willingness for him to be coached and taught the position, and the workmanlike effort he puts in seemingly day in, day out. Like I frequently got a number of times before training camp opened the question about whether or not, because Mitch had some quote out there about whether or not he was going to be willing to take some time away from the game. And I think Matt Nagy said he wanted him to take some time away. At this point, with where Mitch is at in his career, that's just not how he's wired. He's not a guy who I anticipate took a whole lot of time away from football between the end of OTAs and the start of training camp, because he wants the repetition at it over and over again, and he has a hunger to be great. But not a lot of guys are hungry to be great. Not everyone puts the work in, the lonely work that's necessary to truly become great at that craft. And a lot of it that doesn't come naturally to Mitch through repetition, I believe, will continue to push him in that direction.
Do you think that Mitch, because when I watched him, he clearly is a rep guy, almost to a fault of rigidity. Like, I was reading a story about Lamar Jackson yesterday, and they were talking about how they don't want to coach the instincts out of him because he's the guy that seems like he's got eyes in the back of his head, that he's just got that natural instinct that if the fourth read is the one that's wide open because of a coverage breakdown, he might not go read one, read two, read three, and then get to read four. But he can sense that, and he might jump from read one to read four because he just has that natural thing. I worry about that with Mitch.
Yes, very much so.
I worry about the natural ease of which he plays the position, because I think he's got all of the skills, like you said, and the work ethic, and I believe in Nagy's system. But that is one of the only places that I still have fear with Mitch, is that he's got a little paralysis by analysis to his game.
Yeah, and it was accentuated so much more as more got thrown at him last season. Like, and I keep reminding folks about like his rookie year, that third preseason game, the first time he got any reps in a preseason game with the ones, and of course, you know, offensive system was different and whatever else, and Dow Locker was his coach. Those things being said, But in that, I call it the snap it Mitchell game, where he's out there, he breaks the huddle, he's doing motions, the defense is shifting around, and he's got no idea what he's doing, to the point where you hear Dow Loggins from the sideline yell, snap it Mitchell, and he didn't. He picked up right. You know, a penalty because he couldn't get things set quickly enough to actually snap the football, so he picked up a delay of game. And where he's continued to grow in the time since then, yes, as a reps guy, as a, you know, Peyton Manning was a reps guy, Matt Ryan is a reps guy. We were just talking about why he's in the preseason game right now. He wants to be in the preseason game because he is a reps eater. He likes the activity of being out there. He feels like it makes him better as a quarterback, whereas a Baker Mayfield just has sort of an innate skill for making the types of decisions you were just talking about with Lamar Jackson at
yeah,
the position.
Pat Mahomes.
Pat Mahomes, just an innate skill for throwing the ball. Now, is everything going to be perfect? Are you going to, you know, mechanically go through everything exactly how the coach would like to grade it out afterwards? No, but a lot of those guys who have the more innate skill at it end up being huge playmakers because they can, Aaron Rodgers, because they can balance the natural skill that they have, the above average physical gifts, with that innate ability to not only throw the football, but to feel the timing, the angle, the velocity necessary, and where you need to deliver it at that point with the anticipation that's necessary. Those are things that quite a bit of it doesn't come naturally to Mitch. Didn't come naturally to Peyton Manning, in my opinion. Didn't come naturally to Matt Ryan. There are guys who are more rep eaters, rep guys who, as they get more looks at it, as they get more repetition at the position, these things become muscle memory because they've been in that scenario over and over and over again, whereas your Baker Mayfield, your Pat Mahomes types don't necessarily need 10 reps at it. Now, they may not be your worker bees who are willing to put that lonely work in to the same extent that Peyton Manning, that Matt Ryan, that at some point, hopefully, Mitch Trubisky, his career takes him in that direction where he needs the reps for these things to become muscle memory because it's not just innately in him like it is with some other guys who are gifted in a similar way.
He's Anthony Herron. I'm Danny Parkins. This is McNeil and Parkins. There is there's a lot of stuff that we can get to break up some of that the seriousness of the football talk, but I think there's so the idea of what Mitch can
some
be.
Some eyes glazing or some ears glazing over
little,
out there.
A little, but I love it so much because to me, what I've said is you can win a Super Bowl with the best defense in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be a dynasty. There's just too much turnover in this NFL, and it's too much of an offensive league. If you want to be a winning team for a decade and competing for a decade, you need to have a good quarterback, period.
And I'm just – I don't know at this point what we would feel like Mitch doesn't have to think that if this coaching staff handles their jobs correctly, that they can't get Mitch to that point where he's a Super Bowl-worthy quarterback.
I feel the exact same way. We'll get some stat projections from you in a little bit, but we're going to get to some of that audio to break it up, too. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score. Papa John's is giving you a free pizza this weekend. It's a good deal. Buy one pizza at regular price and get a second pizza of equal or less value for free. You use the promo code FREEPIZZADAY on the Papa John's app or online at papajohns.com. That's promo code FREEPIZZADAY. Cubs lineup is out for the opener of their series against Pittsburgh. No Addison Russell, who has been recalled, but Hayward is your center fielder back in the leadoff spot. Very interesting. He's hitting 169 as a leadoff hitter. Castellanos bats second and right, followed by Bryant, Rizzo, and Baez back in the lineup from his illness at shortstop. Schwarber in left, Lucroy catching, Hendricks and Kemp is your second baseman. So no Addison Russell. Albert Almora has been demoted. If you haven't heard the news, Brandon Kinstler is back with the team.
Well, with no Contreras, I mean, I don't know. Who's better off at leadoff at this point? You know, Hayward had the talk with Joe about not looking over his shoulder, giving him some time to get it figured out. Who makes more sense up there right now?
I said it yesterday to Jed that it felt like Rizzo should be there given his power outage mm-hmm. because he had gone 49 games with only two home runs, mm-hmm. but he had a 394 on base percentage. Mm-hmm. And then Baez got scrapped and they flipped and put Rizzo up top. So obviously I took credit for putting Rizzo.
Right, with good reason.
It wasn't Mark Gonzalez writing into the Tribune or Anthony Rizzo calling himself the best leadoff hitter of all time. It was my completely original idea.
Yeah.
So Rizzo would be one answer, but that's not something they're interested in doing long term.
Exactly.
Because of his power. So yeah. Maybe it's a Band-Aid solution, but Hopefully Hayward snaps out of it.
For right now, to finish the road trip, maybe a Band-Aid makes sense. But, you know, they went the Hayward route basically with the promise that we weren't going to kind of yank you up and down the lineup over and over again. So it feels like the organization, I guess, is just kind of keeping their word for a guy who's had, his breakout season as a Cub. And then they said, you know, we're not going to just come yanking you back down if you have a few games where you struggle.
Anthony, you have a tremendous delivery and poise to you. I'd like to think that I've got a good radio voice, but
you do.
Thank you. But we are nothing compared to this viral video of the most Chicago accent imaginable,
really?
Trying to corral a baby coyote.
No, it's okay. Hey, 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 hey. It's okay. Hey, shh, 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 shh. Come here. Hey, shh. You're okay. I'm not gonna f*** with you. Don't worry about it. No, you're not that tough. Come here. Hey. You gotta go to a rehab facility or something. Listen to me. Hey, you probably got mange. Maybe you got rabies. I should have brought my damn gloves. Shh, it's okay. You'll need help, you know? And I just don't want to get bitten. I want to help you, but I don't want to get bitten. Did some redneck shoot your parents? What's going on? Please don't bite me. But I've had my rabies spider, if it makes you feel any better. Shh. I think you got to come with me. I was going to take you to a rehab. My friend Cece works in a rehab. That was cute. You think you're tough. You're trying to show me you're tough. I believe you. I believe you're so tough. Come on, let's go. Oh, my God. You're f***ing emaciated. Please don't bite me or give me mange. Oh, you too. Uh-oh. You're probably sick. Okay.
Have we not established that I'm not going to eat you? Don't you believe me yet? You're pretty underweight, and, you know, you didn't want any of that turkey jerky I gave you, so that makes me worried. I just seen a tick jump ship, which means either there's some sort of problem with your blood flow, or the tick itself thinks you don't stand a chance. But I'm going to see that you have a chance. What I was going to do is take you to a nice rehab facility, and then they'll release you back to the wild, and you can go eat some feral cats and squirrels and stuff like that, you know?
Hey, and then we can go get a beef dipped. You know what I mean, Coyote? Don't bite me. Bears.
How many references to mange were there? In that there had to be at least 5 references to mange, a rehab facility. And that's where my Chicago accent.
You got to go to a rehab facility or something.
Yeah.
Tanny, do you think by any chance we might have the ability to have use for the rehab drops on the McNeil and Parkin show?
Oh, I won't speak to that.
Okay, I'm just curious. if we might have.
If you look at the old farmer's almanac of score personalities, I think, you know, things eventually come back in style, but I hope we don't.
You told me this was a planned vacation that
it's
Mac was on.
It's a planned vacation for Mac.
Take you to a nice rehab facility.
This coyote's got good speed.
Please don't bite me or give me mange.
We can.
I don't want mange either. Well, whatever mange is, because I'm not an animal guy in the least, but if mange is as bad as it sounds, especially with this guy's delivery, yes, you should avoid that. I was going to say avoid it like the player. You should avoid it like the mange.
Avoid it like the mange.
Yeah. I'm going to start using mange instead of plague. Mange sounds worse than plague. Plague was one of the worst words in the English language until now. Now it's mange.
Mange.
In a rehab
Bears.
Facility.
Bears.
You gotta go to a rehab facility or something.
What something?
Yeah, whatever else you have the option to do, coyote.
Hey, you emaciated coyote. Man, take you to a rehab facility or a casino. I don't know.
Mange.
It's incredible.
I love that word. I'm going to work mange into some football broadcasts now. Every once in a while, like some folks, like a producer, just toss it around. Hey, see if you can
go.
Fit this in somewhere.
There we go, Danny. Game within the game in. There.
Game within the game. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Big Ant dropping mange for us.
All right. So that's what we'll do. When you got to work. Who's your first Pac-12 broadcast?
So the opening Thursday night, I've got Kent State at Arizona State.
Oh,
you'll be watching that anyway, Danny.
Classic. That'll drive audience for us.
I think it's like 9 p.m. Central, by the way.
Awesome. Tanny, this is great. We have Jason Benetti working in references for us on White Sox games, and we've got Anthony Heron doing it on Kent State ASU at 9 p.m. on Thursday night.
Please don't bite me or give me mange.
Mange.
I don't want mange either.
If you work mange into the broadcast, I will text you day of the game, and then we will play it back on the air.
Can somebody remind me, please? I'm definitely going to forget between now and however many, what is it, like 2 weeks still till college football?
I don't know, man. What's the most remote place that they send you to?
Pullman, Washington is really hard to get to.
Two flights?
Two flights from here, at least. That's it. Pullman, Washington's hard. Now, Eugene, Oregon is difficult, but University of Oregon's there, so it, you know, feels like a really big deal while you're there, obviously. But Eugene isn't exactly easy to get to. There is a not necessarily international airport, but like United flies into Eugene.
Yeah.
So I can at least get there doing that. Pullman is tough. It's at least a two-flighter. Eugene has the occasional direct flight. It's just not always fitting my schedule.
Well, you work Mange in for us, buddy, this year. That'll be you sending a smoke signal to the the McNeil and Parkins Mange.
Please
mob.
Don't bite me or give me Mange.
Mange mob.
Rehab some injuries.
Some rehab, you emaciated coyote.
Okay. Rehab start.
I want to do story time with Anthony Herron. He's crossed paths with some big-time names that I don't know if people have gotten out of him before. I'm going to try next on The Score.
Take you to a nice rehab facility.